Hi, I'm Brian Nash, the host of How We Got Here, a genealogy podcast for Atlantic Canadians and for people exploring their family connections to Atlantic Canada. Each episode I'll be focusing on a topic and exploring resources and tools related to that topic, as well as sharing your stories of exploration of your family history. Today, in my first episode entitled Beginnings, my guests are Larry Villanova and his sister, Linda Villanova Gleason from Connecticut, and they will be sharing their story of how they're connected to Atlantic Canada and how they started their exploration of their own family history. Hi, Larry. Welcome to the podcast. So while we're waiting for your sister, Linda, to join us, do you mind just sharing a little bit about your mother and how you found out about her connection to Atlantic Canada?
She grew up in an orphanage in Halifax. It's kind of a heartbreaking story. I don't mean to be a Debbie Downer, but it is very, very heartbreaking. She was removed from, her and her siblings were removed from the care of her mother, of their mother. In June of 1939, right around the time the King and the Queen of England came, I guess.
Okay.
And I guess my maternal grandmother basically left them and was off doing something and left them alone. So the authorities came and removed them and brought them all to orphanages. My mother was 5 years old, so she wasn't able to go with the other siblings because she was older than the little ones. So they all got to stay together. She went to a separate orphanage, the St. Paul's Home for Girls on Tower Road in Halifax. And they went to the infants' home down the road, and they weren't permitted to see each other or anything like that. So it was very heartbreaking. She was very lonely. She never understood what happened. She never knew her father. Now, that's where it all comes in, because she never knew her father, had no relationship with him. And when she moved to the States, you know, she married our father and settled here in the New London County area of Connecticut. And when my sisters and I were growing up, we always heard about her heartbreaking life in the orphanage, how she never knew her father. She was told years later when she reconnected with her mother here in this area, because she came to this area to find her mother, and she found her, and then that's how she met my father, basically. And basically, she never knew her father, so she knew nothing. So in the 80s, when she and one of her sisters went back up to Nova Scotia, they looked into some archives or whatever, and all that they could find out about her father was his name was Vernon Clinton Miller, and his mother was Agnes Miller. So with that, then my mother passed away in 2005. My sister and I started on this journey of, you know, Ancestry.com. So Linda, my sister, she found all this information because Vernon Clinton Miller was born of, you know, Agnes, the former Agnes Moreau. Well, the name Moreau is very prominent in Nova Scotia. Reverend John Baptiste Moreau came to Canada from England, and he was originally from France. And, you know, Linda can kind of fill you in on that a little bit more, we're just saying it just kind of breaks our heart that our mother never felt like she belonged, and yet she really did belong to this huge, vast family of Moreaus, Rayfuses, Clattenbergs, and she never knew this. And the only reason we found out is through Ancestry, and we matched with DNA with all of these people, you know. So Linda and I went up to Nova Scotia last May and just absolutely fell in love with it. We found graves of our two times great grandparents, you know, our great grandmother and, you know, Agnes Moreau. And, you know, she had had another daughter, and she's buried with her in the Titanic Cemetery there, Fairview.
Oh, I see that Linda's joining us there, so let's just pause here, Larry, and we'll get her in on this. Hi, Linda. Welcome to the podcast. Larry and I got started a little, but What I'd like to really do is, before I get too in depth, is just to get to know a little bit about my guests. So, just can you guys tell me a little bit about yourselves? I understand your brother and sister, and Larry was already telling me a little bit about the beginning of your journey and the starting of genealogy. So, can you just maybe tell me a little bit of what you do when you're not working on your family tree?
Assigned to Pfizer, and I work with clinical trials, and that's my full-time job. I'm married with two sons, two adult sons, and my one son is about to get married in 2021, so that's exciting. We're working on that, the preparations for the wedding. Let's see, what else do I do? I mean, I'm a foodie, so I love to go to different restaurants and try new foods. Travel is huge with me. I finally have gotten my husband to travel, and the way I got him to travel was through genealogy, putting it across to him, like, why don't we travel to Ireland to look for your family? So that was I got him his first trip to Europe by kind of approaching it that way. Let's look at your genealogy. And so so just normal regular things, nothing too crazy. And of course, genealogy in my spare time.
Okay. What about you, Larry?
Well, this past year I've actually become unemployed, so I've had a lot of time to look into things. I'm about to return to work soon. And I'm single, not married. And that's it. I'm pretty much on my own. I enjoy television, researching, genealogy as well. Looking into old memories of our late mother. Like I said, our mother died in 2005, and we're still kind of reeling from that. That it hurt a lot to lose her, and she was always very, hurt by her childhood and her past, and that's affected Linda and myself as well.
I know we were talking a little bit about it earlier, Larry, so just going to include Linda here now. So can you guys just go back and just tell me a little bit about how you got started in genealogy?
Linda can explain that to you.
So I think I was the first one in this family to start it. However, that being said, Larry and I, we definitely enjoy the history of our family. And because our mother was an orphan and was always looking for family and talk to us about that, we always had that in the back of our mind. So but we really didn't have a lot of hope in finding much because she was an orphan. So with that being said, Larry and I come from a very diverse ethnic background. Our paternal grandfather was from the Philippines, and our paternal grandmother was from Russia. So and because we knew them and grew up with them, we thought we would have a better chance in filling out our family tree with those with that side of the family. So I started out going onto the Ellis Island website, and I did find the passenger list and the manifest of our grandmother and great grandmother and great aunt coming over from Russia to the US through Ellis Island. And so Larry and I took my aunt, our paternal aunt and cousins, to Ellis Island, and we spent the day there just really enjoying the research and the resources that they had and the exhibits and everything. So that kind of started it. And I want to say that was around 2011, wouldn't you say,
Yes.
Larry?
Yeah, it was June
2011.
2011.
Right. And then I kind of put it aside. I was very busy with, children and my career and everything. So when the ancestry DNA came about, was very popular, we decided to do that. And that kind of really, the results of that really put us into let's do this mode. I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Larry, but
Well,
that's kind of how we got started.
before you called in, Linda, I had said once we got DNA results from Ancestry, like Linda just said, it opened up all sorts of things. There was somebody with Vernon Miller's name in their tree and a daughter, a long lost daughter of his. That's my mother's natural father. So Linda contacted the woman that moderated the account, and sure enough, there was this lady who was also the daughter of Vernon Miller, who actually knew him and was born 10 years after my mother. So we've since connected with her. We did an ancestry trip out to California where she lives, fell in love with her. She's a wonderful woman. Linda can elaborate on that. So yeah, we could absolutely do commercials for Ancestry.com. So that's what really got this going. She knew a little bit, but not much. But all these matches were Moreau's and Rayfuse's, and you know, and they're in. Come to find out, in Nova Scotia, I guess was full of those people. And so that's where all this has taken us. And we,
yeah, I know quite a few. I had lived on the South Shore for a while, and especially the Rayfuse. There's a lot of Rayfuse's around the Chester, yes. Lunenburg County area.
Right.
And we went to a cemetery in Mill Village, or was it Mill Village, or was it
Mill Village?
And Fort Medway, Mill Village, and yes. There was this lovely little cemetery there, and all these people were there that are in our tree.
Right, and we also went to Lunenburg, and we utilized the South Shore Genealogy or Genealogical Society's resources. Right. And went to that cemetery where the original Refus, I think is the pronunciation, arrived in Nova Scotia and is buried there up on the hill there in Lunenburg. So, yeah, we still have a lot to do. But, you know, we finally feel a connection, you know, that we really are part of these people, that all the times our mother spoke about Nova Scotia, and didn't know much other than she did have her birth certificate and had this man's name on her, mm-hmm. you know, birth certificate, Vernon Miller, where it would lead us. We had no idea that the Reverend Moreau was one of the earliest settlers of Nova Scotia. And so we're learning about the history of all of this. And, you know, it's fascinating. And we're just so thrilled that we feel like we have a family that we didn't know about.
So was your mother born in the Halifax area, or was it down in the South Shore area originally?
In Halifax.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. And in 1939, I believe Larry had told me earlier.
1933.
Right. She was,
30,
she was removed from her mother's care in 1939, in June.
Okay.
Yes. And that's where she was brought to St. Paul's Home for Girls on Tower Road in Halifax. Yes.
So you mentioned she had other siblings. Yes. Now, have you guys been able to make contacts with them or their children? Or
yes, well, absolutely. Go ahead, Larry. Yeah.
Well, my mother had an older sister who was there the night they were removed from the care too. But I don't know if she was present at that time, so she wasn't removed from the care of their mother. So she ended up being raised with the mother. Because I think the mother had to go on trial. We're not sure the results of that. We tried looking into the newspapers at the library, but we kind of got into a dead end there. There was no real, you know, children's records are sealed for like ever in Canada, privacy, you know, so it's hard to find out this information, what resulted from our grandmother's desertion, basically. But yeah, her oldest child went with her, and they kind of went to Montreal. And another child was born, but my mother was the oldest that was taken that night with the three younger siblings. So, yes, we have a relationship with the children of one of those siblings. Well, a couple of the siblings, but they're kind of scattered. But our uncle, Billy Bootlier, he has children that are in Chester and, you know, all Bridgewater, you know, that area.
Yeah, Halifax area.
Halifax and Bedford.
Bedford, yep.
Yeah, his name ended up Bootlier because that was his natural father. Our grandmother had many children, you know, pardon us, but from, you know, different men.
Right. Okay. So our mother was a half sibling, had many half siblings, and she was the only that we know of from the same mother but different father, which was Vernon Miller. And that's the side that took us to the Moreau and Rayfuse names, right, was through Vernon Miller. And he was not the biological father of my grandmother's other children.
My mother was the only legitimate child of this woman and Vernon Miller. Come to find out, which that would have really kind of tickled her.
Right.
I think it's great that your brother and sister are in here collaborating on this genealogical project together. Just wondering, through your research, if you found any other relatives, I mean, you touched base with them, not just through DNA, but through the regular searching of records, and if so, what tools or resources have you used for that?
Yes, Brian, we actually, now that we're on, you know, Facebook, and we've joined a lot of the genealogy sites through Facebook, and specifically the Nova Scotia sites, and mm-hmm. not only genealogy Nova Scotia sites, but also just Nova Scotia sites that show old pictures of the area. And so through that, I connected with a Rayfuse, and just by, you know, commenting on some of the photos that were posted, I connected with him, and he actually sent me copies of a book that a spiral bound book that someone prepared on the Rayfuse family. So he helped out quite a bit by just sharing that book, you know, that research that someone put together. And he actually is still in Nova Scotia and mailed it to me. And I was so surprised that someone would be so kind to do that, you know, someone that we had never met. And so, yes, we're, you know, through some of these sites and through Facebook groups, we are kind of meeting people that are doing the same things. We are looking for the same people and, you know, sharing information that way. And then, of course, I personally have joined a lot of, you know, societies. I joined the New England, you know, the American, I think it's American Genealogy or American Ancestors out of Boston, and, you know, several different societies that I've joined, you know, for information. I think, Larry, you had a subscription to a magazine. So yeah, we're trying to utilize resources that are out there, and there are many.
So you said you visited Nova Scotia last May. Well, not last May because of COVID, but the May before. So what resources did you use to prepare for your trip, and what resources did you take advantage of when you got here?
That's a really good question. So, you know, we had always wanted to go to Nova Scotia. Unfortunately, we never got to visit, you know, while our mother was alive. But we really tried to plan. We didn't have a lot of time. We had just about a week. And so we knew that we, besides a little, you know, sightseeing, we knew we had to hit certain areas. And the main one being in Halifax, because that's where our mother was from. So we did go, we used the public archives, we mm-hmm. used the public library. Our mother was a member of St. Paul's Church because they sponsored the home, the orphanage for girls. And so we went there and spoke to the archivist.
And don't forget, Linda had our mother's ashes. So a big motivation was to have somebody bless the ashes before we spread them.
Okay.
And that they were spread in the public gardens in Halifax. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but that was one of my mother's favorite places, where she would go and feed birds when she was a young girl in the public gardens. So Linda knew she wanted to, you know, do that there in the public gardens. So before that, we went to a church service at St. Paul's Church on a Sunday, and connected with the vicar, if you will, the minister, a lady.
Yep.
And yeah, she blessed those, and you know, instead of putting them out in the water, we figured our mother would have loved more being in the public garden.
Definitely. Yeah, you know, a nice way to reconnect her with her yes. past. So I see we've lost Linda there. Hopefully she can rejoin.
Right. Yeah, I don't know how that happened, but hopefully she rejoins.
So, with that, when you started, you at least in your Atlantic Canadian research, your goal was to make that connection to your
maternal side, yes.
Your maternal, yeah, your mother's family there, and seems like you've done a lot more. You've made some
other
connections,
more than we expected, because like Linda said, we know our father's family down here, and yet it's limited. It only goes back so much, and then it's over because he's of Filipino and Russian descent. So he's first generation American. So there's really no information, and we're at a standstill there.
Hi, I think
but
I.
But with our. Oh, good.
Sorry, I'm so sorry. I dropped off the call. Go ahead. I'm not.
That's okay.
Like Linda said, we ended up learning just a plethora of knowledge about Nova Scotia and and all these people. And no, it's not over yet. We're just scratching the surface, basically. And that's part of our interest in joining this podcast. If, you know, if there's anybody, you know, because there's, like I said, before Linda was on the phone, due to Canada's privacy, there's nothing we can find out about our mother's childhood, really. And her activities in the orphanage were documented a little bit in the public archives, but very limited. And because of being youthful. You know, being a youth, there's no information. So, and we realize it's been over 80 years and there's really probably nobody left that's alive. But if there was anybody that, you know, had any connection in the 1940s to St. Paul's Home for Girls or Tower Road Elementary School, you know, that would be great. Because our mother was in the church choir. She did have friends. You know, I mean, there was a stigma being an orphan, you know, with the regular kids, you know, we've learned that, you know, and so there's all those little aspects that we'd love to find out.
Now, how old was she before she left Nova Scotia?
She left Nova Scotia in 1954, roundabout when she met our father and became engaged, but she was still a citizen. You know, so she had to go back, I think, and I believe our father had to sponsor her to keep her here in the U.S.
So she was in her, would have been her 20s?
Early
then?
20s.
Yes, okay. Early 20s.
I believe I was born with...
So she grew up in Halifax. It wasn't that she was, adopted from the orphanage and went down.
They placed her at the age of 17 in a job as a governess for a well-to-do family on Bloomingdale Terrace in Halifax. And she spent a couple of years doing that. And then she moved on to another governess job for another family. And in between this, Brian, she was reconnecting with her mother in Connecticut but via letters. And then would take the Greyhound bus to New London, Connecticut, which is now our area, and visit her once a year. And, you know, her siblings down here, because lo and behold, she remembered her older sister, Ruth, but she had a younger sister now that was born after she was taken away. So she reconnected with her mother. You know, I could say they were close, maybe so, maybe not. There was a lot of hurt feelings there, of course. But she did meet my father, and they got married, and then had us. And life happened, but she never really forgot her. She always talked about Halifax and Nova Scotia to my sisters and myself, always.
Yeah. Actually, Brian, she never became a U.S. citizen. Mm-hmm. She wanted to remain a Canadian citizen, and she did. She did. You know, many people asked her, you know, you've been in the U.S. so long, why don't you just become an American citizen, a U.S. citizen? And she just was adamant that she wanted to remain a Canadian citizen. She had so much love for Nova Scotia.
So much love.
And it definitely seems like she passed that along to you guys.
Oh, definitely.
Before you even got here.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, we loved it before we got, but we fell in love with it when we got there. We want to come back, but unfortunately the times right now don't permit that.
No, it doesn't. It's definitely changed the way we do a lot of things. In a way, I think it's been helping a lot of people be able to utilize some of the online things that are available to find their family resources as opposed to always having to go in person to the or getting somebody else to go in person right. to do the research at an archive.
I find the Nova Scotia archives incredible. I have found so much information on that website. And I utilize it frequently.
So what would be the tips that you would think if somebody knows they have ancestors from Nova Scotia, but they don't know much about them? Where did you, I mean, you had her birth certificate, so you had names and you mm-hmm. had a date. And you knew yes. her backstory, but where did you start to dig deeper? Was it the archives?
That's where yeah. I started. Of course, with genealogy, you basically have to start back. You have to go backwards, right? So, you know, just having that father's name on her birth certificate, which, you know, we didn't know if in fact he really was her father, but that's where we started. And, you know, having that mother, you know, the grandmother's name on his information and moving backwards and finding out the Moreaus and the Rayfuses, who are very, substantial, you know, prominent families in Nova Scotia yeah. in their history, that was allowed us to find more and more information about them, because they did have a lot of history in the area. So the archives had an abundance of documentation.
At any point did you find yourself going down those rabbit holes that we all get into and just find a particular ancestor or cousin that just is just that fascinating person that you it's such a interesting story you just don't want to put down. I mean, your mother's story is fascinating enough as far as to keep your interest, but is there been those ones where you found somebody that just you want to know more?
There's endless rabbit holes.
Yes. I think number one, you know, would be the Reverend Jean-Baptiste Moreau, who, you know, came from, England with Cornwallis mm-hmm. and actually named his firstborn son after Cornwallis and had a long history in both Halifax and the Lunenburg area.
And began that church. Linda, let him know about the beginning of that church and how coincidental that is.
Oh, yeah, in Lunenburg, I think it's St. John's Anglican. And, you know, we went there and he's buried in the crypt there. And we also saw that. And actually the church had a lot of information about him and his family. The rabbit holes just keep coming.
Well, where I was going with that was my mother loved her church, St. Paul's Church. And lo and behold, Jean-Baptiste Moreau was commissioned, I believe, from England to help out with that, to begin that church. And then he branched off and started St. John's over in Lunenburg. But he did have a hand in the church at St. Paul's, which is very coincidental because my mother never knew she was from that family. And yet she loved that church so much. And the rest of her family ended up being Catholic and, you know, different things, but she always was Anglican, and that is in keeping with her family background, rang true. And that's a rabbit hole we found as well, that, I mean, she really was an Anglican through and through.
So, which have, you know, a great history, in Nova Scotia. The Anglican Church was particularly responsible for a lot of the early communities coming together, and the educational institutes and the churches, definitely. With that being said, so you're finding out about Moreau, and so that led you to the church in Lunenburg. What did it feel like going there and you know, stepping on those stones, so to speak, where your pathway, your ancestors had been?
It was just what people would say. We felt very, very close to the whole thing. It was very almost palpable. I mean, we definitely felt it, absolutely. You know, from the cemetery that Linda was mentioning outside of, you know, the genealogical society with all the refuses, you know, and we know that we still have a lot more to do. We want to return someday and go to Annapolis Valley, where a lot of them were from, Annapolis Royal. So yeah, there's so much more to do, and we're very excited to do that. So
right.
It can only get better.
Yes. But going back to the church, yes. In Lunenburg, there was just such a peaceful sense and excitement, and, you know, to know that our forefather, you know, had preached there and, mm-hmm. you know, was really responsible for, you know, continuing, you know, the Anglican service, you know, in that area. And it still exists today. And the fact that he is, you know, buried there in the crypt in the church. Yeah. And again, there was so much information just in the church about him, names of family members that we hadn't discovered yet. So it was a wonderful day. You know, we took a lot of pictures. We have a lot of pictures of both inside and outside the church, and it was a wonderful day, and we just felt so fulfilled. But we, on the other hand, it was bittersweet because we had wished our mother could have experienced it with us, because had she, as my brother said, she never wavered from her Anglican faith, and which is hard to do here in the United States because there aren't a lot of Anglican churches, but she never wavered. And so for the fact of that, there must have been something strong in her, a pull, even though she never knew that her forefather was so instrumental in bringing that, you know, Anglican faith to Canada. It was just such a special feeling for us.
Definitely. That is you know, that's an important part, that when you find that relatives that, you know, that ancestor that had that spot in history. Excuse me. So with that, you talked about coming here again, and once the time sort of get back to that new normal, or at least where there's more travel. So you mentioned the Annapolis Valley. What other places are you
here? Digby, definitely.
Okay, Digby. And what are you hoping to find there?
Town does there has been mention of Digby here and there. We're not sure.
Right. We've seen some document with our grandfather, Vernon Miller, being from Port Medway. We have some documentation showing that he was from Digby. So we have to, you know, genealogy is all about proving, right? So, so we, that's what we need to do. You know, we have to do some more proofing.
And a big thing, Brian, let me just insert this. The man, Vernon Miller, who we're talking about, was my mother's father. He is just this lifelong mystery. He was a mystery to my mother. We can't find any information on his death. I'm sure he must be dead by now. He was born the day Titanic hit, you know, April 15th, 1912. So I don't know if that played a part in anything. So he's just this huge mystery figure, right, Linda? I mean,
yes.
He can't seem... And there's dead end after dead end about him, you know? I mean, he has relatives over in Ontario, and they don't seem to know anything because he had a sister there, and yet there's still no information, or either that or nobody wants to give information about. We're not sure, but we know that he had some sort of activity in, or we suspect he had some activity in Digby. And we might suspect it ended up in Maine, the state of Maine, too, because I think there's a lot of travel between Digby and Portland, Maine, or Maine. We're not sure, but that's another rabbit hole that we're still not climbed back out of.
Okay. And is that Miller, M-I-L-L-E-R-A-R?
And just to add this too, just to complicate it even further, it apparently from DNA matches, I don't believe that he was Vernon Miller, but I don't know if his true parentage was of the Miller family, because there's a lot of links to New Brunswick and then the state of Maine. And that's a whole other rabbit hole that would take another hour and a half for us. But there suffice it to say, in my mother's story, there was a lot of paternity issues. Let's just say that.
So that's your sort of your next goal, is you've fleshed out the maternal side of the family a fair amount, so
that's
sort of hit
province.
And attack those roadblocks.
Our father's side is all Russia, Philippines, and down here in Connecticut. So
okay, do you as so with the visiting. Again, the Digby, yeah, you're right, with the connections to Maine there and through all that southwest Nova part of the province in Nova Scotia there. So what details have you found out? You found out he had some business dealings, elsewhere?
Linda,
or?
Linda has come across a travel record.
Yeah, when he was a young lad, he went to Maine to stay with an aunt. I suspect we suspect that maybe his father wasn't necessarily in the picture, or the father that is on his birth record wasn't necessarily in the picture, and he might have been giving his mother, you know, trouble. So it looked like she sent him off to, you know, Maine for a summer. And then on my mother's birth certificate, it says that he was a chauffeur. On our half aunt's birth certificate, it says he was a taxi driver. So, you know, there's some clues there, you know, as to what he might have done. So
we did attain a picture of him and his next wife through our half aunt, through my mother's long lost half sister that she didn't know she had. So we do have a picture of him. And that's about it. There's, like I said, there's a whole other rabbit hole with his paternity on his father's side. And that's another story. But what we're concentrating on right now with Nova Scotia is the Moreau Rayfuse connection. But trust me, there's a whole other rabbit hole with New Brunswick and Maine, which actually leads to, you know, even the Salem witch trials and stuff. I mean, there's a rabbit hole, an endless one that Linda and I are coming upon.
So when you guys started, you were using, you know, as far as You neither of you had any formal training necessarily in doing genealogy.
None at all.
So what things did you wish you knew then, as far as how to go about it? That you know, if wow, it took me 3 years to figure out that I could do this, and now that I know it, boy, it makes my life easier. No, I found this tool, this resource.
Yeah, I think you know, I wasn't originally on Facebook for a long time, and I just am amazed at how many groups are on Facebook that are willing to help, both with genealogy and also DNA. So there's many, many groups that really point you to, there's a lot of free information online, right? So a lot of these groups are very willing to share that information. Then obviously you have to, if you're really serious about it, you do have to start, you know, spending some money and joining some, you know, societies or buying, you know, books. You know, I've spent some money buying, you know, purchasing books through, you know, Amazon and just different genealogy sites that I've come across. You know, they'll reference a book and I might, you know, try to pick it up if it's reasonable. I didn't realize how many resources were out there when I started. I really thought this was going to, you know, just result in, not much information. But as Larry said, we just keep, you know, finding more and more information. So, I mean, you know, obviously next steps, you can't rely on the internet for the entire, you know, process. You really do have to start making, you know, trips. So, you know, I didn't realize that, but it's come to the fact that, yes, now we're at a point.
Right.
For this item, we have to go to that area.
Because like Linda said, that in Lunenburg, that it's the former Lunenburg Academy, I guess. It's the Genealogical Society now. There were books there like that people wrote, like family members, that are not available online. They are only available if you go to that center. So that's why travel is essential.
And definitely just even touching some of those artifacts. And I mean, as much as we can see things in paper and be excited that that's my great grandfather's signature that you see there, it's something different to be able to actually hold it and sort of have that experience of the place. And though we can't always recreate the time, we can definitely, you know, get that sense of geography and belonging to a place. So like the bell at the St. John Anglican Church, just getting the understanding the historicness of that. And, you know, that's, and being able to see that and being able to, you know, make it to those places. What would be something you'd give as advice for somebody starting out that, you know, what advice would you give them? What thing would you, you know, steer them towards? Or you mentioned some of those things there, but also steer them away from, because sometimes, you know, as genealogies, as we're, you know, I was talking to somebody yesterday and we were talking about what a genealogist is, and she's a professional genealogist I was speaking with, and you know, we were discussing it, you know, we're part detective, we're part you know, we're part historian, we're part story writers, we're explorers, we're interpreters, you know, a lot of times that we have those things, and sometimes it can, but sometimes I find we can get lost in the specifics of worrying about those things that distract us from our end goal. What kind of advice would you have?
For me anyway, I'm really, I get discouraged when, you know, you're on these sites, right? You're the Ancestries, the MyHeritage, and you get hints, right? So that my I guess you would call it a pet peeve, is you know, being lazy and just accepting these, you know, these leaf hints as being gospel. You really, you know, if you're truly, you know, interested in finding out the information, you really need to look at those hints as, okay, that, you know, that's a possibility, but really doing the research yourself. So don't, you know, number one, don't just take what somebody else put down in their tree as gospel, as proof, as fact. Mm-hmm. You really need to do your own research. And, you know, that's number one for me. Larry, I don't know about you, but
expounding on what Linda was saying, there is actually one person with probably good intentions on Ancestry that absolutely just copies everybody's tree of our paternal side, and it's not even related to her, and she has like 100,000 people in her tree. I feel that that's wrong, and those are the kind of people I think Linda's kind of saying you got to stay away from. My advice would be absolutely do the DNA, because I think that is top. Getting the actual physical proof, you know, that you're connected to these people, and believe some of the things that you've heard, family lore, and some of it don't believe, because a lot of it is fables, you know, a lot of wrong stories were passed down through in our family, you know, to my mother, and, you know, different stories, and it ended up confusing turns that we were taking, honestly. And it's detrimental. A lot of family lore is just nothing but fables and outright lies. And
yeah, that's a good point.
People have to be very, and it happens in, I don't care what family it is. I don't care if it's the Kennedys, the Roosevelts, there are lies that get passed down. And people believe them because they, you know, started somewhere, and it throws everybody off. And that's been a big, you know, dead end for us, I think, is some of the lies that, let's just say, these grandparents or whoever, you know, set into motion. And, you know, our poor mother, being the victim of all this, didn't know. She was a little girl and a lonely little girl, and unfortunately, you know, grew up, you know, but still loved, like Linda said, still loved her homeland for some reason. I don't know that I would have if I had been through all that, but she did. And she definitely had a connection to that church, and that was a big thing for her. And like, even to her dying day, we weren't able, there was no Church of England person for her to, you know, bless her as she was dying or anything. It was very difficult. And, you know, us as a family, we definitely struggled with it. So in a sense, I think we're almost trying to, I don't know, just make good on her memory.
Yeah, to give her a family that she never had or knew about. So yeah, I don't know how far it's going to take us. It's taken us farther than we ever thought.
Exactly.
But at least we have a family for her now.
Yes,
definitely. Now, I'm going to ask this question specifically to Linda, because you mentioned you didn't have any children. To me, Larry, what are you doing? Are you to get your kids interested in genealogy? Have you done anything? Or is there any?
They're not interested. They literally roll their eyes when I start talking about this, which I talk about very frequently. Yeah. So they may be rolling their eyes now because they're in their late 20s, early 30s. But I suspect that down the road, they're going to say, oh, look at all this information Mom, you know, learned about our family. And, you know, we used to make fun of her.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm talking about it. And especially, I have one son that lives in Boston.
Yeah, one son I am encouraged about. Yes.
Yeah, one son that lives in Boston, Massachusetts, where there is a huge history there. And actually, my husband, his father's family, maternal side, came from Boston. So we'll go and visit, and I'll point out, oh, I found out this is where your great grandfather lived at one time. And so I am pointing things out. They know about all of the trips I'm taking and looking through cemeteries and looking through documents. And I do explain it to them, whether they're enjoying it now. I don't venture to say they are, because I do see the eye rolling, but I think someday I think someday they might be
when they're older.
Yeah, happy that I did this and that I did it with my brother, which I have to say, I'm enjoying it so much doing this with my brother because we have the same, you know, goals about it. And we both really feed off of each other because I'm more of the records person. I like looking and delving into the records part of things. And he enjoys the DNA and making those connections, analyzing the DNA. So we are really good partners when it comes to this.
And just to add this, we do have a third sibling, a sister who has zero interest as well. Linda and I have found a lot of our family don't have much interest. It's kind of just us. Yeah.
And I think that's the way it is in a lot of families. I know the last week I had found an audio recording that was done by a university. They were researching mining in Cape Breton, and they interviewed my great-grandmother. And I was excited. I hadn't heard her voice since I was 6 years old. And she was telling stories. And she's my most recent ancestor to come to Canada. Mm-hmm. She came in 1905. So she was 12 when she came here and she grew up, and it was really exciting to me. She talked about stories about mentioning my grandfather who, was my mom was an only child. She had one sibling that died very young in infancy. And so my grandfather was really close to us, and my brother and myself, we had a really good relationship. And well, she told the story about, that her husband took him and his brother when they had the whooping cough, and he brought them down to the mine to lay on the floor of the mine because that was a common cure.
Wow.
And it was really interesting just to hear that, and sure enough, that cold dampness was, something that people would do back then. But just hearing her voice, hearing that little bit of Scottish brogue in her was just, wonderful. I was telling my daughter about this, and she said, I said, do you want to listen to this? It means nothing to me. She's 22 now. I'm hoping that someday it will. Going on sort of with that topic, there's things that when I do my research, I just wish, they would have written this down. I wish somebody would have recorded, like hearing that recording just made me think of, oh, how many more stories, she died when I was 9, the last time I saw her was 6, but if I would have been like I am now, been interviewing and asking these questions, I wish she had a diary I could find type thing. What are you guys doing yourselves to, so your descendants, maybe mm-hmm. not your own children, but maybe, two or three generations down the road, I want to know about them. What are you doing to leave those past, those archives?
Well, that's probably one of the things that I need to be more diligent about. I have a big Rubbermaid box that I throw things in, notes and everything. And I did purchase the one of the software packages, the family tree maker. I purchased that so that I can, start saving some of the information. But I have to be honest and say that I'm not too organized with, getting it together and to be able to pass it down. So that is something that I hope to do. I am still working full time. So, in my retirement, I think I'm going to be, doing more of this work at that time.
And what about you, Larry? You might not have children, but you do have those. Yeah. You have those great nephews and nieces, and that will be there. What do you want them to, what are you doing so that they can know and understand? So you're not just that name on a family tree, but you're a person to them. Is there anything, are you conscious of that? Is that something you guys do in your lives? I know it's something.
Yeah, I'm
recently starting to become more conscious.
The only thing I can really do is ad nauseum, keep speaking about it to these people. And, you know, they won't forget that way. I mean, they might roll their eyes now, but someday they will remember. And I've said that someday you will be interested. I have some things written down. It's scribbled on notepads. And, you know, I want to perfect our family tree better. That is my goal. That's kind of really all I can do is just constantly keep saying it, repeating it.
And hopefully it eventually doesn't fall on deaf ears. And
his sons, I think he's a little more interested because he lives in Boston and there are a lot of connections on both sides. The older nephew, I hope his wife will someday want to know more, his future wife, for when they have children. And I've made it very clear I'm there for that. So they know that. And cousins of ours, well, you know, I don't know.
Although at family gatherings, they do like talking to us about, you know, they're like, yes. Well, since the last time we saw you, what have you learned?
Right. But yet nobody really wants to take part or anything, honestly. I mean,
it's hard work.
Up in Canada, we did, you know, get acquainted with our uncle's daughter. Unfortunately, she has a different side of the family that we don't share the same grandfather. So her maritime relatives are different, but yet they're distantly related too somehow. Believe it or not. So,
very easy. And it's like any community that we know we're settled. There's a limited number of people in that community, and eventually
there's crossover.
There's a lot.
Yeah.
Which, like I said, in our story, in my mother's story, there's a lot of paternity issues. So just that's, you know, there's it's rife with like potential, well, a lot of probably past scandal, and that doesn't make people very comfortable or desirous to learn anything, honestly, because it brings up old wounds or scandal. And that's another part of this issue.
That's a really good point that you make, Larry, you know, about scandal. We, you know, when we do our research, we do find scandal. Yes. And that is something that people of, you know, of our generation, they take it to heart. You know, you watch these shows like Finding Your Roots or whatever, and people are disgusted from, you know, ways that of their ancestors, and you can't feel, you know, that it's your fault that something happened 200 years ago.
Yes.
Is your fault. It's just information that, you know, it's just something that happened, and, you know, you have to accept the good with the bad, of what you find.
And it's a lot easier when you're dealing with people that are those a century back, or where there's not necessarily as many people that were directly involved still there. You're right. We all have those scandals. And some things that are scandals to us now wouldn't necessarily be scandalous back then. Because of the nature of it, because they had different moral compass that they were living by. They had, well, just different practicalities of living. Like I mentioned, you know, all the relatives that lived in a community, you're going to have some common ancestors there.
Yeah, and not only that, another thing
people
that
didn't travel.
You have to consider too are families that maybe couldn't take care of other, you know, members of their family, the children. So they go to live with an aunt or a grandmother and are raised as the parent. And so that's another whole other topic of trying to figure out, you know, with documentation, is this a real biological child of this couple, or is it someone, and you might find out it's really some, you know, somebody else, like the sister's child or, you know, the niece's child. So it's really hard to, you know, determine that, in some cases. And we find that that's really, prevalent in, you know, in a generation or two ago, where families took on other family members' children.
My biggest advice, honestly, Brian, is keep an open mind you know, and don't say no to everything. And just, you know, I mean, there's a lot of possibilities, you know, people are not perfect. And we know that from ourselves. But certainly back then, with all the struggles and all the challenges they had, you know, they had to hide things. I get it. I do. I get it. Having lived my own life, you know, I get, you know, so I have a very open mind about any possibility. Who knows what all happened, but I'm open to it. Other people are not. And that's a challenge that we've had. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, even just, you know, finding out a relative was, you know, which was born actually two months after a couple was married, as opposed to thinking, oh, they were married the year before, you know, those type things that, you know, can be scandalous. It really wouldn't necessarily have any effect on their upbringing, the but it's that, yes, that stigma that we kind of attach to. So it's likewise, been very nice talking to you guys today. Okay. I have a couple other questions. So just to take off something you said about your personal life there, Linda, you said you were a foodie. So when you came to Nova Scotia, did you get a chance to visit Linda, that Linda, side of it?
Tell him about the beer we loved.
And have some real
Nine Locks beer. I loved the beer from Nova Scotia, Nine Locks. I loved that. Lobster rolls. Seafood chowder was amazing. Oysters Recky on a half shell were amazing. The herring was amazing.
And the brekkies in Lunenburg. Oh,
the brekkies. Our mother used to make codfish cakes, and I used to think, what? And where did she get this recipe from? Oh, we had breakfast in the morning with codfish cakes. Mm-hmm. And my brother Larry said, oh, here, right on the menu, it says brekkie. That mom used to say that term.
She did. So we saw a lot of people that looked like her. But yeah, getting back to the food, we loved the food, and our mother loved food.
And seafood. Yes.
Yeah. It was something that connects you. So, and that's one thing I've noticed. Some people that do genealogies, one of the things, yep, I've seen is a lot of people including family recipe books, which is amazing because, you know, it is a way we connect to our ancestors, whether it was, oh yeah, that's, yes, the great aunt that every Christmas brought over this, or like you said, your mother making the cod cakes and not from realizing that it was necessarily, it wasn't just an eccentricity, or an eccentricity of something she found, but something that was very popular.
Food. Oh, yeah.
And Nova Scotia is a great place to experience food and beer.
Ryan, that was a major aspect of joy of our trip, actually, was the food part. So we look forward. Yeah. That's a major reason we want to go back to is the food. There's a lot more.
And
and also the beauty.
Yeah.
It's easy to see why a lot of people stayed in Nova Scotia when they originally immigrated here. There's something that is captivating about the province.
When my mother settled here in the New London, Connecticut area, when I went to Halifax and saw the McDonald Bridge, I think, over from Halifax to Dartmouth, I said to Linda, I said, this does look a lot like New London and Groton, Connecticut. And my mother used to say that to me when I was little. And I saw that. So I think she was very comfortable in this area because of the sea. We are very much a sea area down here. And with the river going right between the two towns, I think New London is like a small Halifax, New London, Connecticut, the way that, you know, the little avenues are and the downtown. I think our mother felt comfortable here when she met my father because it was very similar to where she grew up, and yet she could somewhat be close to this mother she always sought a relationship with.
I know my own interest in genealogy started when my dad was in the military, so I had lived all across Canada and always had a difficult time of saying exactly where I was from. Even today, when people ask my wife, because she grew up in the same house, her parents still live there, when she has a definite place, when people ask her where she's from, she can say. When they ask her where I'm from, they usually say Canada. But it's one of the reasons I got interested in genealogy, because I want to know those connections. And as I, you know, I have more and more of those connections, you start to realize how small the world is. And you know, I thought my family's completely Irish on one side and completely Scottish on the other. And I thought, you know, there'd be those little bits of maybe some French because of the Normans, even probably a few English relatives, and maybe some Scandinavian. But I've really learned that, and I've been able to make some connection with some cousins from around the world. And it gets you to think about how...
And the world's probably a lot smaller in that sense when you start looking at it, and you, I find it, you know, sometimes true, I look at people so now true. And they could be a cousin, some sort there, you know, you start seeing those family resemblances where there's nothing really there. Just an innate desire to want to be connected with people. And speaking of that, I really enjoyed connecting with you guys today. And hopefully we maybe get a chance to talk again sometime. I know I'm going to do a future podcast specifically on, you know, those struggles with finding adoption records and stuff in the Maritimes. And there's always ways around finding things. Like you said, Larry, a lot of records are sealed, but there's other resources there just to, you know, so I'm hoping that you do an episode where I'll be talking about people about what are those other resources and avenues, and I'd love to have you on again sometime.
Thank you.
Take care.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks.
I want to thank you all for taking the time to listen to my podcast today as we explored the story of the Villanova family and their search for their maritime roots. My next episode, entitled A Purpose for Everything, will be released December 9th. I will be exploring the importance of setting goals in your genealogical work and what tools you can use to track and help you achieve these goals. You can leave me a comment about today's episode, or if you would like to ask a question, or if you have a suggestion for a topic of a future episode, by using the link found in the show notes, located on whatever podcast platform you use. Remember to check out our Twitter feed, How We Got Here Too, as well as check out our Facebook page to learn about upcoming episodes and how you can participate and help to contribute to shape future episodes. How We Got Here is hosted and produced by Brian Nash and distributed through Anchor Podcasts. Theme music is from Tribute to O'Carolan by Luna Bojaleski, available via Creative Commons licensing. How We Got Here is hosted and produced by Brian Nash and distributed through Anchor Podcasts. Theme music is from Tribute to O'Carolyn by Luna Bojaleski, available via Creative Commons licensing.